Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 74 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're on that page also. And find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. So find me after games and media coverage, pregame coverage, between game coverage, all that kind of stuff. Today on the show, I had a guest yesterday talking the Lakers game. Today from B-Ball Breakdown, James, are you a what do I call you? You're not a Thunder fan, but you're a Thunder supporter. Is that?
I'm a Thunder fan adjacent. That's the new term I've come up with because I'm a Celtics fan, but I've been following the Thunder ever since that Finals appearance, and I thought they were to me. Every year I called them win the championship, and every year I was wrong. So.
So James Hollis from B-Ball Breakdown. Since I didn't give your last name before. James is, you might know him from Twitter because James is pretty prominent on basketball Twitter as Tweet Good Mac or Snotty Drippin.
Snotty. It's funny. My man, Amin El Hassan gave me a shout out on the True Hoop podcast the other day. So that's a kind of weird, it's a surreal feeling.
Oh, Amin is like the king of snark.
Oh yeah. He was really snarky about it too. He's like, yeah, I'm talking about basketball Twitter, like Snotty Drippin, or it's one of those guys who everybody kind of knows. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Thanks. I mean,
you're a basketball Twitter celebrity.
You can hear the disdain dripping off his voice though. So it was like, which is fine. I'm kind of a clown. So.
So we've got actual Thunder stuff to talk about today. Like real non-even game news. Thunder extended two guys today. They have three guys eligible for contract extensions. Victor Oladipo, Steven Adams, Andre Robertson. They re-signed Adams and they re-signed Oladipo to extensions. Steven Adams, $100 million over 4 years. Just a little bit under the max. Victor Oladipo, $84 million over 4 years. Those are some pretty solid numbers, I thought. I mean, look, getting Steven Adams for under a max contract, which if you're going to sign him to extension, it's going to be a little bit below a max because if he's restricted. So if he insists on a max, you can just say, all right, let him go into free agency and re-sign him then. But right. Locking those guys up, that seems pretty mutually beneficial to me. What did you think?
I think it was – this is – a lot like we said, say with Portland, when they locked up all those kind of mediocre kind of guys, or I'm sorry, it sounds terrible. They locked up their own guys because they looked around the landscape and says, hey, we're probably not going to get anything really better. Let's keep our guys and then grow internally. The Thunder did the same thing, but I think the Thunder have a little better outlook because Steven Adams is going to be great. And I think Oladipo has a really high ceiling. So, yeah, they won't. They're serious that they're trying to build a new bedrock after a summer of upheaval. So yeah, I definitely see it, especially with Steven Adams. The jury is a little bit out, but I'm high on the guy myself.
Yeah, Oladipo is really interesting because it seems like he, and this is not just based on three games. This is based on 3 years with Orlando too. He obviously has tons of ability. There's no arguing otherwise. I mean, he's number two overall pick. He's a crazy athlete.
Right.
He's explosive off the dribble. He's got good vision and he's smart and he plays super hard and he's got a great motor and like all these things. He's good on ball defender. Like all these things are true. But he goes in and out. Like he's really inconsistent from game to game, from possession to possession. He's a great driver, but he doesn't drive that often. I mean, I think people in Oklahoma City are starting to realize that now. People here obviously weren't watching the Magic. I mean, people talked about him as a penetrator, and he is because it's what he's best at. But, like, Victor Oladipo averaged the same number of drives per game as Deion Waiters did last year. And Deion Waiters did it in, like, 10 fewer minutes a game. He doesn't really like to penetrate that much. He likes to hang out and shoot long twos and put up jumpers and that kind of stuff. And seeing if he can kind of hone the best parts of his game, which could be really good, is going to be interesting because the Thunder have really good internal player development. And they've made a lot of moves that kind of bet on their internal player development. And I think Oladipo is another one of those moves.
For sure. That's my thing with Depot. It's like, it seems like when he's confident and when he's rolling, he looks like almost like a top 20 player in the league. We've seen him. I think 1 year he averaged almost 17, 5, and 5, which, you know, for a guy who wasn't, I think, 22 at the time, that's big time. But then he'll just disappear, and he hasn't rebounded very well so far with OKC, and he has those nights. I mean, look, the first game, I think he put up 35 in preseason.
Yeah.
And then he basically fell off a cliff. It just, I don't know if it's about confidence with him. I don't know if it's just he's just his feeling his way around. And honestly, I think maybe the contract was looming and his next summer was looming. So I got a feeling maybe from here on out, we might see him start picking up steam. I mean, he's paid. The Thunder show a lot of confidence in him. Why not? So I'm really high on him. I actually wrote a couple things on him in BYU Breakdown. I called for him to be my breakout player 2 years in a row, which is kind of not cheated. But because he didn't break out last year, I said, you know what, this is going to be his year, and that was even before the trade. So,
what did you think of the figures? Because one thing that I think maybe I don't know what the average fan of this podcast really understands about NBA finances. So I'll explain it a little bit more simply, and those who really understand it, I apologize for talking an extra minute that you don't need, but. The NBA salary cap went up this summer. These numbers, I know people look at, whoa, $100 million for Steven Adams? That's crazy. It's really not crazy at all. Actually, it's an underpay because if Steven Adams hit the open market, he would 100% get a max contract. There is no question about that. And that's not even just my opinion. I'll take my opinion out of it. Like anybody who I talk to who works in basketball, it's not even a discussion. It's Steven Adams. Of course he's a max. Are you kidding me? Of course he's a max player. So Steven Adams was going to get a max. You get him for a dime less than the max. That's good value. You have to look at these numbers as percentages of the salary cap, which is now significantly higher than it was. It's up to $93 million now. And you have to look at that's how you have to look at, or $94 million. That's how you have to look at this stuff, percentage of the salary cap. And Steven Adams, $100 million over 4 years is fine value. I think it's funny that Oladipo ended up getting more per year than Evan Fournier after all that. The Magic basically decided they thought Fournier was better than Oladipo, and then Oladipo got more than Evan Fournier, which I don't really know if that means anything, but I do think that's kind of a funny little thing, because Fournier got, what, 85 over 5?
Yes, I believe that's right. So, yeah, with Adams, it's funny. I think I read somewhere that in the new cap environment, the average starter is going to be making about 15 or 16 mil anyway. That's an average starter. Steven Adams is well above average. I think he has the potential to be a top, what, 5 center in the league, you know, in his heyday. So that, and plus, I also say I think the Thunder, just like kind of like Toronto and kind of like maybe Memphis, they got to play, they're paid some kind of small market tax where. If you want to get premium guys, they might have to pay a little bit more because they're not a big market. I don't know how true that is, but that's kind of what it feels like. I mean, they gave Mike Conley 150 something in Memphis because if he leaves and somebody else pays them that money, they'll be hard pressed to really bring in another talent even close because they're Memphis. For Oladipo, it's a gamble. It is a gamble because he's so inconsistent. But he is young. I think once he sells it to routine. I think a lot of his development is going to be on Russ, honestly. It's up to Russ to start. He said himself he needs to share the ball and trust his teammates more and put him in better positions. I think game to game, they need to know I have this much latitude to do this. I have this much room to operate without, you know, one game Russ taking 55 or 44 and one game he takes 21. They need to all figure out their own rhythm and flow for an offense. And it's some time coming. It'll be some work. But, I mean, we see shades of it every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Russ and Oladipo are going to take time. Like they're
definitely.
LeBron and Wade took like a year and a half, and they're LeBron and Wade. You put two perimeter guys whose strengths are with the ball. You put two drivers next to each other. It takes time to work out those styles. Like both of those guys are better when they have the ball in their hands, and there's only one ball. So it takes time for those guys to work things out, because so much of it, it's not necessarily like Victor Oladipo has to get better at cutting off the ball. That's not really what the thing is. Like, that's a simple way to look at it. It's mm-hmm. that Victor Oladipo has to become better at reading how Russ works within an offense, so that way he can make better cuts, not in general better cuts, but better cuts for what works with what Russ does. And the only way that can happen is just over time when they get a feel for each other. That's kind of what happened with LeBron and Wade. Like, Wade would make cuts for LeBron, especially in transition. Wade would make cuts for LeBron that he wouldn't make for anybody else, because nobody can throw the passes that LeBron can throw. So, like, Wade would be open when it was LeBron, but if anybody else had the ball, he wouldn't have been open in that spot, whether that was on, like, you know, a 60-foot lob pass that LeBron would throw him or whatever else it was. And those two need to work out, because, you know, Russell Westbrook has this amazing passing ability too. And those two need to figure out how to develop that sort of chemistry. And that's just something that takes time. Like, that's the only way to do it there. I don't know if there's a shortcut there.
I will also say, I think it might be easier for Depot and for Russ, because with Wade and Bron, you had two alpha personalities. You know, Wade was used to being the man for years and years in Miami, and he had to kind of swallow his pride a little bit and step back. We all know who the alpha is in OKC. We know who the man is there.
I think Victor Oladipo knows it too.
Exactly. So I think he already understands his place in the pecking order. I think he's like a sponge. He's probably soaking up, eager to learn from Russ. I read where he said that he thought he worked hard, but after working with Russ, he realizes, you know, he sees how hard Russ works. So I think he's going to fall in lockstep a lot faster. I really do think it's weird, as hard as Russ is playing right now and all the, I still feel he's kind of feeling out, because we don't see the steals right now. We don't see the disruptive. We know he's not a great defender, but we know he can make things happen on defense. We're not seeing that right now. I still think he's kind of cruising at times in the game and kind of trying to let things happen. So, once he reaches his real season rhythm, And Depot falls in where he falls in, and you know, I think again with Adam, same thing. I've noticed Adam fumbling a lot of balls he doesn't normally fumble. He's been kind of out of sorts. We all know the first 2 weeks of the season are basically like extended preseason anyway, right? So in 2 weeks we'll talk about the Thunder offense. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. I think that's all a good point. Adams has bobbled a lot of passes, unlike those pocket passes from Russ. He's kind of. Yeah. He's fumbled a bunch of them. It's weird. He has good hands. Like, that's not going to be a thing that continues. For all we know, that could just stop against the Clippers. But it was weird. It was weird to see that happen for three straight games to start in the regular season, because it's not even like it was happening during the preseason.
Right. In the preseason, those meat hooks were working, and he was just, you know, snatching things out the air, catching the lobs, getting puck. But, yeah, all of a sudden the season starts, and he turned into stumble fingers.
That's not going to keep up. I don't think the Thunder have anything to worry about in that front. He'll be fine. I think the greatest bet anybody in Vegas made, I don't know who the heck would have made this bet, but the greatest bet anybody in Vegas could make was Steven Adams over 9 points per game.
Oh, that's easy.
It's so easy. I can't believe that. That's an easy over. I can't believe it was so low. Like, if you prorate his points per game average over 30 minutes a game from last year, it was nine and a half.
Oh yeah, it's such an easy, because he's going to play at least 32 to 34 probably, at least. Yeah,
that's what I figure. And
yeah, he's going to put up 12 to 14 a game, easy.
Yeah, he's gonna. Well, the only way he doesn't get that is if he gets hurt and he doesn't qualify.
Knock on wood. Let's keep Steven healthy.
Absolutely, I need those interviews just for selfish reasons. Dude's the best interview out there. I'm telling you what, if Steven Adams still says. We're going to talk to Steven Adams on Tuesday, and I'm going to ask him if he's still going to cry poverty when people ask him if he can get a haircut.
Well, see, why don't you let me be your co-host that day? I want to talk to Big Steven.
I'm going to ask him. We're going to talk to him tomorrow at practice, and I'm going to ask him that tomorrow.
That's awesome.
Are you going to get a haircut now that you can? He can get the most expensive haircut possible now. And look, Steven Adams was doing fine for himself before, but see, he can get himself a very nice haircut now. I'm going to see if he can do it. It's amazing. There's this poster of Steven Adams in downtown Oklahoma City, and it's him from when he was a rookie. And every time I do like a double take if I ever see it.
He looks like a different person.
He's a different human being. It's unbelievable.
He looks like a totally different person now.
Yeah. It's amazing. He looks like he was in like a boy band before. And now now he's like unbelievable.
He's a bush man now. He looks like he just came out of the bog and washed his hair and Encino Man. That's what he looks like. Encino Man when he first came out.
Yeah. He's Danny Trejo is what I keep saying.
Oh, geez.
He looks like Danny Trejo. He's straight out of the Expendables.
So let me ask you this, though, and I'm going to turn to the interview for a minute. I love Roberson's game. I love what he brings and his potential. I don't think he's going to get much better offensively, but, I mean, he just needs to defend like the Dickens and cut and crash the boards and hit a three or two. But right now I think they got between Oladipo, Cantor, and Adams, they got like $92 or $93 million tied up already. Is it possible if your boy Houston's under contract already, is it possible that they move on from Roberson?
It's possible. I think it all depends on what the market is next summer. I mean, he's restricted. So if he gets offered some offer sheet that they like, they're going to match. Like they definitely like his game for all the things he's good at. He's an awesome defensive player. Like he's really become one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. I don't think there's any question about that, and I know they certainly believe that, and I don't disagree with them. I don't know if he's ever going to shoot, but look, I mean, Solomon Hill just got $13 million a year. What was it, $13 million, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And I think Andre's a little bit of a different player than Solomon Hill. He's a little bit of a bigger wing. He's more of a 3-4. Andre's more of a 2-3. But they're kind of comparable in that they're not really shooters. Their offensive games are kind of closer to net zeros, and they let their defense stand for themselves. I think you can actually make an argument Andre is a better player than Solomon Hill.
I don't think we get made much argument about that. I would definitely say Roberson's a better player than Solomon Hill.
Yeah, and Hill just got, you know, a lot of money. So I think he's definitely going to get paid. It's just he's not really the type that usually extends. Like, I know we saw Cody Zeller extend today, and that was a really good deal for Charlotte, I thought. Like, he's a rotation big for sure, and he got, what, $56 million over 4 years. Like, that's a really, really nice contract for him. You know, it's less than Jan Mahimi, less than Gorgui Dieng. Like, that's a good contract for somebody like him. But that's, you know, that's a big man, and we don't really know. I'm sure his desire was obviously pretty strong to stay in Charlotte because I imagine he could have tested the market and gotten more money than that. Middling guys don't often sign the contract because it's just not quite as intuitive, you know? Like with Steven Adams, it's like Adams says he wants the max. The Thunder say, we know you're going to get the max, but we're not going to offer it now and we can just match on you next summer. So we'll sign you for like slightly less than the max. Adams says, decides on if he wants the security now or if he wants the higher ceiling later. And then when he decides on security now, he's like, fine, I'll sign for $6 million less than the max. And that's the whole negotiation. Like, that's how it works. With Roberson, there's a lot more variation. It's, we don't want to give you more than this. Roberson says, well, if I have a great year this year, I think I can get this in free agency. And it's just harder to come to an agreement. I don't think that not coming to an agreement on an extension really means anything in that case. And I don't think it necessarily means anything in the Thunder's desire to want to re-sign him. I don't know if teams are going to want to tie up cap space making restricted offers to Andre Roberson either. Like, I think he's somebody – like, Solomon Hill was unrestricted because they didn't pick up his option. Roberson's right. Going to be restricted. So he could be someone who could linger in restricted free agency next year, like a Dion Waiters type, you know. So he could be someone who could linger, and if he lingers, maybe some teams run out of cap space, and that doesn't mean he doesn't get paid. I think he will get paid, but it could just be a slower process, and maybe he just ends up, okay, my best option is re-signing, and he ends up coming back to Oklahoma City in that way, in that avenue too. I definitely don't think this means Andre Roberson is definitely gone. I think it just is he's in a harder circumstance to negotiate an extension.
So let me ask you this. What do you think he's worth as far as that I know we're both speaking just from purely hypothetical. And then what do you think would be offered what's the minimum amount that we offer where the Thunder would have to say, you know what? Good luck to you, Andre. We got to let you walk for that.
Hmm.
I like this. I like being the interviewer.
Yeah. Yeah, you've really flipped this. Do you watch Curb Enthusiasm?
I do. Of course I watch Curb.
I this is reminding me of when Leon is giving Larry the the advice for the interview. He's like, you got to flip him. It's really reminding me of that. Okay. Because you've now flipped the interview on me on my own podcast.
You are hoisted by your own petard. So
I don't know what the number is when you walk away, because honestly, I haven't factored the Adams and Oladipo contracts into. I haven't learned, like, I don't know what they're going to be enough in off the top of my head in 2018, 2019,
right,
to know the Thunder's cap situation in those years, you okay. know, because the issue would be down the line. It wouldn't be for 2017. You know what I mean? So because they're going to be over the cap anyway, so who cares if you're, you know, 12 over the cap or 15 over the cap? So I would you know, out of context, he seems to be, to me, to be in that like 11 to 14 range.
That's good. That's about spot where I was thinking. I was thinking 12 to 13.
Yeah, something like that. He seems to me to be in that range or so. The difference between him and Solomon Hill is that this market was so different this year. First of all, he's restricted and Hill isn't. And everyone had cap space this year, and not as many teams are going to have cap space next summer, not only because so many teams already spent last summer, but also because cap holds are going to be higher under the new CBA. So it's going to be harder to sign guys when cap holds become higher, which I think is, if they make cap holds go higher for 2017, I think that is so stupid. I hate that. I hate that they're negotiating rules and teams are having to operate and make personnel decisions while they don't know what the rules are going to be. It's one thing to make the cap holds higher. That's fine. But, like, they should say they get higher starting in 2019. Teams, like, contracts that were already signed should still have the same cap holds. Teams were operating, anticipating these cap holds. Like, it's so ridiculous that they could just potentially change them on a whim. I think that's so silly. Like, you can change the cap holds and say it starts in 2019 or something like that.
Of course.
So teams have time to prepare. It's so silly that they're guessing what the heck is going on right now. And teams don't know. Like, this is not me guessing. Like, teams actually don't know. And they're just operating like, I guess we're going to do this because we don't know what's going to happen. It's so weird. Because the last time they negotiated a CBA, it was during a lockout. So, like, things weren't going on. You know, teams weren't making decisions during. And now it's just like teams are operating. You have no idea what the heck is going to happen.
It's like the Wild Wild West right now.
It's ridiculous. It's so much more chaotic than like you would think it should be.
Right. You think these guys, you know, these are pros, these are lawyers, these are, you know, attorneys, and they would have a little more, but nope, we don't know what's happening right now.
Yeah. And look, I don't know if there's like a better way for this to go down. Like I don't like the awkwardness of negotiating a CBA while personnel decisions are going on. But I wish there were like some way they could communicate to the teams during, like, all right, there are going to be changes made, but they're not actually going to start till 2018 or something like that. So that at least teams know that, you know, contracts that have already been signed are going to go the exact same way. Next offseason will go similarly. That kind of stuff is like, I don't know if they can do that. And these people who are negotiating these things are smarter than me, but it is chaotic. It is really, really chaotic. And it's just a weird process.
Yeah. I just no work stoppage, but yeah, I totally see where you're coming from, man. And it's funny because I don't usually think about that kind of like the ramifications of that kind of thing, but yeah, it's going to be mayhem, right? Because like you just said, I mean, hey, a guy comes to rookie deals, cap hole is minuscule. You know, it's a little cap hole, and then they resign or whatever. Now they're going to bump that cap hole up. It makes team building so much harder.
Yeah, it's going to make small market teams are not going to love that because it's going to be harder to or I should say big market teams are not going to love that because it's going to be harder. It's going to be harder to sign free agents in that way. Like, guys, it's going to be a lot easier to retain guys because it's going to be a lot harder to clear cap space when you got a big cap hold for a guy coming off. So So that's going to be tough. Want to talk about Russell Westbrook a little bit?
Oh, I can always talk about Westbrook. I can always. I knew he'd be great this season. It's funny because Russell Westbrook has had such a combustible personality and just that flame he plays with. I really thought Kevin Durant was a good foil for him on the team because he was the, you know, the yin and the yang, the fire and the ice, whatever you want to call it. So I was kind of curious to see, you know, especially how the season starts off with Russ. I know he has his intensity ready. And so far he hadn't disappointed. We've seen the best of Russ and, you know, the not so best of Russ. I thought he was great in the second game against Phoenix? I thought he was great for the first three quarters. And he kind of lost the plot a little bit in the fourth. But other than that, I mean, what are you going to do? This team is going to, you know, they hitch their wagon to this train, and it's going to be a great ride this summer. So, yeah, two triple-doubles already. You know, he's already making history. He's averaging 38, like 12 and 11 or some ridiculous number. The guy is just a monster, man. He's pure joy to watch. And then at the same time, in a moment's notice, you can cringe a little bit when he starts he's doing the pull-ups and he's missed three, you know, he's missed four in a row. It's a little cringeworthy, but I get it, man. I love the guy, and I think you're lucky to be able to cover him every day.
You know what's weird about Russ? It's that every player has flaws, like except for maybe like LeBron. Every player has flaws. And Russ's flaws are just so much more obvious than other people's flaws. And when I say obvious, I mean like they're easy for a casual fan to notice. Yes. So people point them out and his flaws become mainstream, which is that Russell Westbrook takes bad shots sometimes. And that's not like a thing that even people who think the highest of Russell Westbrook deny. Like
you can't deny it. Yeah, you can't deny it.
Of course he takes bad shots sometimes. He took 15 mid-range shots in one game. Like, he took 15 mid-range shots against Phoenix. That's crazy. He shot 4 of 15. And, like, I realized Phoenix was goading him into those mid-range shots, but it was because they knew he would take them. Like,
and Fred, he kept taking him. He kept dribbling into the rhythm and just pulling up. And then, like, God, I just missed that when it
cranked. I know. Also, like that was not like some innovative defense that Phoenix was playing. They were just zoning up the pick and roll with Tyson Chandler. Like that was all they did. They just dropped Tyson Chandler really far back and had him defend the rim. And that was it. That was all it was. And that's how tons of teams defend Russell Westbrook. I would actually say it's the most common pick and roll defense for Russell Westbrook. Phoenix just executed it well because Tyson Chandler is awesome. And that's why they were able to pull it off. But the Lakers tried to do that. Mozgov couldn't do it. He kept drifting over to Russell Westbrook because I think he was afraid that he would Blake Griffin him. And you know, Russ ended up finding Adams or finding Kanter on those roles, and it worked a lot better as a passer, and Russ wasn't really pulling up. But like Russ is going to have those flaws, but like everyone has flaws. It's just that Russ's are more obvious, so people point them out. I think like the lack of nuance, and you don't see this quite as much anymore. I mean, it used to be a lot. The you know, anti-Westbrook stuff used to be a lot louder 3 or 4 years ago. But, you know, the flaws that people yell about, they don't cancel out all the good stuff that he does.
That's the part that gets me. Somebody really that shall remain nameless. We'll call him Coach Rick. Yeah, b-ball breakdown. It's just mind-boggling that he really knows his basketball, but he just can't stop harping on, you know, the lack of fundamentals, the wrong foot layups, the bad footwork, and the out of control drives. And I'm like, Coach Rick, he's averaging like 30, you know, 38 and 8. What? I get what you're saying. Could he be better? Any player say they could do this better? Some more are more obvious than others. But when you're that physically gifted, what do you want him to do? I mean, I get what you want him to do, but that's the point. Players won't do what we want them to do. Same thing with Dwight Howard. When we people, oh, if only he would post up. If only he would do. That's just not what he's going to do because he's not going to do it. So, I mean, bemoaning it every day is not going to do anything. The fact that you got this physical marvel of a point guard who can go through and over anybody, just enjoy it, man. The basketball is a sport. It's a sport. We're here to it's entertainment. What are you so upset about?
Yeah. I mean, I think also there's this weird thing that people think because someone can do something better, it doesn't mean they don't do it well.
Right. That's
just because he could shore up things fundamentally, it doesn't mean he already does it well. Like he does many things well. I don't think we need to debate that at all. But he on Sunday against the Lakers, I thought he was significantly better in that Lakers game than, I mean, he was the first guy in 41 years to go for 50 in a triple-double, and I actually thought his next game was significantly better.
Hands down.
It's not even close, right?
Oh, yeah. But just the way he controlled the game, he had a couple late turnovers that, you know, I think they were okay. It happens, right? He's trying to throw the alley-oops or, you know, on the roll. He missed a couple guys, but he played on control. 21 shots. I think he went 11 for 21. You can't complete. And then I think he was the first person ever to have a triple-double with those numbers and hit 5 threes or something. He's just remarkable, man. And the fact that he can go 5 for 6 from 3 one night, and the game before he went 2 for 9 or whatever it is, it's just – that's my one wish with Russ, if he would just do the Dwayne Wade route and just say, you know what, I'm not shooting threes. I might shoot expired from wide open. If he would just do that, which we know he's not going to because he likes the dagger three. But, his game Sunday was about as good as you can see Russ play.
Yeah, I wonder, because he actually didn't shoot threes his first few years in the league. Like, he grew into shooting threes. If you look at his numbers from his first, like, 2 or 3 years in the league, he was only taking, like, 1 a game. And this was, like, really when he was a vital member of the offense. Like, this wasn't when he was, like, integrating in and still kind of, like, you know, getting better. Like, that first year they won 50 games, when was that, 2010? That first year they won 50 and he was averaging over 20 a game. Like he had a great year and he was 21, 22 years old. He took like one three, barely over one three per 36 minutes. He was barely taking threes then, and his 3-point rate was just significantly down. I don't think he ever returns to that. I mean, we've seen him increase in threes basically every year since, or every few years since. So I don't think he ever really returns to that. I just don't think it's in his DNA. You don't want to tell him to take that stuff away because then you're at risk to taking away the rest of the aggression that makes him so good. But yeah, I do wonder sometimes if he could kind of. Dwayne Wade's a good example because Wade was up around 3 attempts a game at some point, kind of in his prime when he was on a team where he really had to be the guy. And then Bron came over and he really just stopped taking threes. Unless he was wide open, catch and shoot three, he just stopped taking threes. He was just a slasher. And I wonder how effective Russ could be if he actually did that.
That's why I say Scott Brooks was a blessing and a curse, because he had provided an environment where Kevin Durant became Kevin Durant, Westbrook became Westbrook, which is great. They won a whole lot of games. I wonder if another, maybe, you know, a little stronger coach, they would implement a little more discipline, could have sat Russ down early and said, hey, I noticed you're doing this now. Let me show you this film. We got to nip this in the bud. And Brooks never, you know, I think Brooks did great. Obviously, these guys are future Hall of Famers. But I always wonder what they could have done with a little more structure, somebody who might have just, you know, pushed them a little more into shaping Russ. But then, like you said, would Russ be who he is if somebody had tried to kind of squelch that fire a little bit?
Anything to plug before we go? Anything that you've done lately?
Oh, yeah. I actually just dropped a piece over at BlazersEdge.com that I think – I'm not even going to talk about it. I want everybody – if you guys are listening, please go take a look at Blazers Edge and let's see my – it's a piece actually on Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf and Colin Kaepernick and just the burden that some athletes carry. It was something way different for me, so I appreciate that. And also, of course, B-Ball Breakdown. We got a lot of guys who are a lot better and smarter than me over there. So check us out.
B-Ball Breakdown is really good. They do awesome. Nick really does. I know we were teasing him before. Nick does do awesome like video work. It's great for learning the game. It's like he explains complicated concepts in very explainable ways. yeah, really, really interesting. Really interesting stuff usually. The video breakdowns are awesome. Lots of good writing. Jesse does a really good job. You do a really good job. It's a really good site. I give it my full endorsement. You get the Norman transcript, full endorsement.
I appreciate it. Hey, Coach Nick, if you ever listen to this, we all challenge you. The people are challenging you. Let's see a Russ breakdown that's not full of backhanded compliments. Yeah. That's all we want. We want to see an actual glowing, like, positive Russ breakdown that's not full of, oh, he actually made one, and that's not what he should be doing, but he made it, so it's okay. We like to see that, Coach. Show us that you're not a Russ hater. Come join the Russ train.
He could do a breakdown of the Lakers game.
Oh, he wouldn't do it because Russ played too well. He needs Russ to do something screwy so he can, like, oh, this is what Russ did again. So, love you, Coach. We just messing with you.
Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, and you can head out to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com, and you can find me on Twitter @FredKatz, and James is @SnottyDrippin. One of the best puns. One of the best Twitter handle puns, I have to say.
I appreciate it, man. It's a lot of fun, but now, like, I'm trying to be – I want to get where you're at one day and be a respected writer, and people say, Snotty Drippin. I'm like, yeah, it's an homage to Scottie Pippen, but, oh, well, I'm stuck with it now, so.
No, it's a solid one. It's better than Damian Trillard.
Really? I like that one. I like the Dame Trillard.
No, I love Sirit, but she knows I'm not a fan of Damian Trillard. I'm not into it.
I thought it was pretty creative.
I'm trying to give you a Twitter handle compliment. We'll leave it at that.
I'll take it. I appreciate it, my brother. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, you can log on to normantranscript.com quickly before we go for Thunder stuff, and I've got stuff up there on extensions and everything else. I'm actually going to do a play breakdown on Tuesday, just breaking down the differences between the Lakers defense, Suns defense, and going through some video work there and how Russell Westbrook, why he took 44 shots on one night, then had 16 assists on the Nets, on the next. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk, Clippers and Warriors games coming up. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
You're the man, Fred.